I would like to add just a few more comments to what Dr. Finkelstein has mentioned. I think we are getting into, again, the same kind of situation as far as the Zionist claims are concerned, that whatever they do, any kind of crime that they commit, they hide it under certain labels. This whole question of the peace process is one of them. The other is the security of the state of Israel, and there are so many other myths that have been created in order to hide their real intentions. As Dr. Finkelstein has mentioned, and let me add further, that Shamir proposal, which was made sometimes in May, then when the meeting of the Likud party took place in July, on July the 5th, in fact, almost each and every of those points was unanimously then shut down as well. So in fact, what Shamir was offering to the Palestinians was that we will choose the representatives for you to negotiate with us, and that we will hold the elections for you. You cannot have any preconditions. We will have the preconditions, and you can have your elections probably to elect people as to who is going to collect your garbage in the West Bank, and who is going to sweep your streets, and where you are going to have your targets. Now, that is not what the Palestinian people are interested in. They have had enough. Mr. Blitzer said that he was born at the same time as the state of Israel. Let me add to that today, almost 70% of the people living in the West Bank and Gaza were born after the Zionist occupation. So they have known no other life but Zionist occupation, Zionist oppression, and Zionist terrorism. What do you expect those people to do? To take this lying down and not protest about it, and not to fight for their rights? I think we ought to look at the situation. If we really want to have peace, let us go back to the basics and find out what are the basics, rather than dancing around these fancy terms. Because dancing around these terms is not going to bring about peace either to the Jewish people or to the Palestinian people. And I think let us be honest and straightforward and fair about exactly what the situation is.
I must remind our speakers, much as we appreciate their words, when you say you want 1 minute to say something, you cannot take five. I'm now going to change my order a little bit in light of what's gone on and address a question to Father Jenko, which is of somewhat different nature. Can you describe briefly your experience as a hostage in the Lebanon, and would you care to speculate on why you were held and the purpose of the suffering inflicted on you?
Well, the reason they gave to the press was, first of all, they made a mistake and they kidnapped the wrong person. They were looking for someone else, and I happened to be there. But in the newspaper, what they said was that they wanted the West out of the East. For 6 months, I didn't know why I was kidnapped, except that I did write a little letter to my family, and I would be held hostage in Lebanon as long as the 17 in Kuwait are being held hostage. And if the American government would intervene on my behalf, I would be hanged. It won't be until I'm into captivity about 7 months that we'll have a chance to speak to the young men that were holding us and begin to understand some of the problems and understand why they kidnapped me. It was in February I made a videotape that was never shown. In that videotape, it was separated off into two sections. One was I could speak to my family, and the other was I could speak to my government. And in that script that they gave me to read, they said, "We're very sorry that we had to kidnap innocent people, but this was the only form that we had to bring our cause to the mind of the American people." And then they spelled out, you know, some of the injustices that they thought were so powerful in their lives and are powerful in their lives. One was the invasion of Lebanon by Israel. Because of the Americans' monies given to Israel, and Israel wouldn't have the monies then to be buying all these arms if America didn't support Israel, and Israel came into their country, we as Americans were considered to be co-aggressors. The other instance was, in this script, was that the American policy in the Middle East is all one-sided. It's all pro-Israel, and they never listen to the voice of others in that part of the world. The third statement was that the Marines came into Lebanon as a peacekeeping force, and instead of remaining neutral, they took sides. They took the sides with the Christians. And when the violence was done to the Marines, in leaving Lebanon, retaliated by randomly shelling the totality of Lebanon. Those are certain things that I can recall right now that were the reasons I was being held.
This question is addressed to anyone. How accurately have the media, not has the media, been portraying the uprising in the occupied territories? Who would care to answer that one? Wolf? Blitzer?
Well, there's no doubt that there's been a tremendous amount of coverage of what's been going on in the West Bank over these past nearly 2 years. Indeed, if you added up the amount of minutes on the national networks, news networks, the amount of column inches in the daily newspapers and weekly news magazines, it was by far, if not the number one, at least the number one or number two story. You would think that this was the biggest event going on in the world. And by no means do I want to belittle it. There have been a lot of people killed. And what Dr. Finkelstein, of course, didn't mention in the past few weeks, as this movement to killing so-called Palestinian collaborators has continued, 125 or so Palestinians have been killed, not by the Israelis, but by fellow Palestinians because they were accused of collaborating. I would say this, there is a double standard at play. When you ask a journalist to define news, a journalist will always give you the standard story that, well, when dog bites man, that's not news, because that happens all the time. When man bites dog, that's news, that's a big story. Israel, indeed, is held up to a much higher standard than its neighbors. And I'll give you some examples. Take a look at how many foreign correspondents there are in Israel and the West Bank right now. Probably at least 600, sometimes 800, and it's been as high as 1,000, roaming around in a tiny area. And the West Bank, after all, is not Texas. You drive outside of Jerusalem, Israel's capital, you're on the West Bank. You drive 10 or 12 miles from Tel Aviv, Israel's largest city, you're on the West Bank. You're dealing with basically a very, very tiny area. News is where there are news people. Good satellite communications facilities, telephones, telecommunications, the story gets out. When much worse is going on elsewhere, the war in Iran, between Iran and Iraq, was largely invisible, even though the casualties were enormous, because neither the Iraqis nor the Iranians allowed free access. Occasionally, some reporters would be let in to observe certain things. Certainly, when much worse is going on elsewhere in the world, how much news coverage has there been these past few weeks with the expulsion of over 200,000 Bulgarian Turks from Bulgaria to Turkey? 200,000 people have been kicked out. And tens of thousands of Kurds have been forced into Turkey as well from neighboring Iraq. Very little coverage. If the Israelis deport three or four Palestinians, it's, of course, a source of an immediate meeting of the UN Security Council, a tremendous amount of international news coverage. My point is this. Sure, Israel makes mistakes. When they make mistakes, it's headline, it's a huge, big story. When Arabs are killing Arabs, or Muslims are killing Muslims, or third worlders, by the way, in general, whether in Burundi in Africa, or in Bangladesh, or any place else in the world, it's a paragraph in your local newspaper, very little on television. It's that kind of double standard, of course, that exists, and which is the source of deep resentment in Israel and elsewhere.